Blog Talk Radio.
March 21st, 2013. You are listening to Off the Crossbar Live, presented by BackSportsPage.com and, of course, OffTheCrossbar.com. We're doing a live feature this evening from the dining room of Adam O. Wells after experiencing some technical difficulties in our home studio. Adam, how you doing tonight? Thanks for having us.
I'm doing pretty bad, actually. I'm rather ill, but here I am doing the show because I love doing it.
10 pounds of crap in a 5-pound bag and still on the air. Adam, boy. It's live radio. Got the drinks a-going. Good thing we don't have the cameras on. Good, solid week in hockey. Things really shaping up across the NHL this week. What's on your mind, Adam?
All sorts of things are on my mind. There are a lot of teams that are doing really well. There are some teams that are really horribly. It's making for a really interesting season, just the closeness in the divisions right now, especially in the West. You got 10 points separating 4th and 15th.
That is incredible. Nobody out of the picture, nobody guaranteed anything.
Yeah, it's been an up-and-down party of excitement all season. So,
fantastic.
What do we got in the docket for tonight, though?
Yeah, I guess we should get to it very quickly. We had a time issue last week. Better to have too little than some dead air, that is for sure. This week, we are going to piss and moan about the shootout and where we stand. We're going to be talking trade bait. Two or three guys we believe will be on the move. We're going to talk about the playoff picture. Some teams currently sitting in the top eight that we think may take the big plummet. Some bottom dwellers that may be making their climb. And, of course, yesterday, everyone's favorite defenseman officially became a senior citizen. Hard to believe Bobby Orr is 65 years old.
Not that he needs it, but he'll be taking advantage of the seniors' discounts now and everything, too.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Good for you, Bobby. Happy birthday to one of Canada's favorite sons. All that and more coming up in this hour. Right now, as every Thursday evening, it is time to go off the crossbar. Man, I love that sound. All right, so first out of the gate this evening, we are going to be talking shootout. We tried to get there last week, but somebody went and scored in overtime. We never got the chance. All right. Deep breaths across the room.
Stupid. Case closed.
All right, next topic.
Yep, done.
The shootout getting a lot of attention over the last few weeks, obviously with the shortened season, every point counting for so much more. We had Kasper Dagovins really making, in my opinion, a mockery of the game. Patrick Kane, pushing the limit, we'll put it that way. Not necessarily cheap, given the way the rules are set up. He's within them, but it's still a little uncomfortable to watch. Red Fisher calls it the gimmick. How do you feel about the shootout? Just in general, where do you stand?
From a purely hockey point of view, I think it's stupid. I think it's just kind of put in there to entertain people who are kind of on the fence about hockey and who think that this is just, you know, the essence of hockey, the one-on-one player versus goalie. You know, you're testing skills that don't really come up a lot in the game. You're taking just basically you're giving the shot to your three best players in hopes they can win the game for you like that. Goalie has a bad night, player has a bad night, whatever. I just think it's kind of stupid. Ties maybe not necessarily, you know, in the playoffs it works. You play until it's done. I mean, I understand that, you know, people got to get home on a weeknight, not the playoffs, blah, 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 blah. But I just give them at least a 10-minute overtime. Just give them more of a chance to actually play hockey before you get to the dog and, or the, you know, the dog and pony show. Or
well, are you a fan of the idea of moving to a 3-on-3 when the game is not settled by 4-on-4? I know that there are some, and they do tend to be on the fringe, but some legitimate hockey minds who have made that suggestion.
as much as it would open the game up, I don't really think so. I'd rather just see a 10 or even a 20-minute 4-on-4 period. There's nothing wrong with the tie. There's no shame in it.
Yeah.
And I also don't think you should automatically get the point just for getting to overtime. I think if you make it through overtime, you should get the extra point, or you should be awarded a point.
I like that, actually.
To the end of overtime. But I think it's just stupid that you're just automatically awarded the point, and then you play for 5 minutes, and you know, people just waste, you know, they just waste time to get to the shootout once you've already gotten that point. So what is the point?
You know, I like when you save a good solid point for the show and don't let me know it's coming in the pregame. That was a solid point there. I do really like the idea of forcing that through. One guy whose work I follow, for better or worse, I mean, obviously with writers you agree and you sometimes disagree. One very opinionated person out there in the world of hockey is Adam Proto, and he tweeted this week, as retweeted by the Hockey News, I would rather listen to an endless loop of Fran Drescher singing "We Didn't Start the Fire" than watch an NHL game that ended in a tie. Listen, I'll give the guy full points for saying it in a hilarious way, but I don't see what's wrong with the tie. If two hockey teams show up and they play an equal game, I'm all right with a tie. I'm much more okay with a tie than I am with seeing an NHL hockey game, seeing a point awarded based on a skill that has nothing to do with which team fielded a better team on any given night. Because to me, hockey is a team game, and to see it settled by one team's best three shooters versus another team's single goaltender simply does not reflect the team that's on the ice. When you look at, let's say, the Columbus Blue Jackets right now playing an incredibly solid team game, you would hate to see something like that go taken away from them because of a shootout. I prefer to think that hockey is about the unity of the team on the ice. It really does bother me. When I see Kasper Dagamets turning the stick upside down, listen, that's making a mockery of the game.
That's something that should be saved for an all-star skills competition. You're
exactly.
You're trying to make the fans smile. You're not trying to do that at that point. You're trying to win the bloody hockey game. Sure, he came close. It was a valid attempt, I guess, because he didn't technically break any of the rules. But it was stupid.
Well, and that's it. It literally does make a mockery of the game. I don't care. Listen, if you miss, you look like a fool for trying. And if you score, you have successfully embarrassed a professional goaltender on national television with a ridiculous hot dog move. Somebody's going to try to break your head open in the next game. It's literally a lose-lose to attempt something like that. And unfortunately, the way the rules are set up, it's perfectly legal to make that attempt.
His only saving grace was the fact that it actually did become a shot on net, and the save was made. So, you know, the coach couldn't really break his foot off in his rear because he got a shot on net.
Oh, I would have.
But he did end up getting a shot on net. It was pretty close. It was a nice save. So, I mean, you know, had he missed the net, then, yeah, he would have been strung up, drawn, and quartered. Had he scored, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You embarrass a goalie, and you get your ass kicked next game.
And, I mean, to be fair, we are here talking about it. It does draw attention to the game. I remember, I believe it was the first year that the shootout was in the National Hockey League, Merrick Malik in the 10th round on Olaf Kolzig going between the legs. Here's a guy who had not scored a goal all season. That was fun. It was neat. But the novelty has worn off for me. It was something to see. It was kind of an exciting highlight. But
you want to make it more exciting? You put the goalie who didn't start the game in net, and you start with your defenseman shooting. I mean, if you got a superstar defenseman, all stuff. But you know, like it's not a fair way to end the game. It's a stupid way to end the game. It's strictly for entertainment value.
And especially when the entire concept for a general manager of a National Hockey League club is to put together the best team that money can buy, the best team that his money can buy, whatever that revenue happens to be. And to see it decided by, again, Patrick Kane going one half of 1 mile an hour, essentially stick handling, standing still. Yeah, that's a neat skill, but try that in a game. Even on a clear-cut breakaway, somebody will catch you and snap you in half for even attempting. It kills me. And it kills me because, well, actually for a lot of the same reasons that the lockout shortened season kind of gets under my skin, in that it ruins records. I know for a fact that these goals don't count as goals towards a player's statistics. But you know what? These wins count as wins. So when you're talking about the number of wins in a season that a goaltender can pick up, or you look at the fact that Don Cherry no longer holds some very specific and very prestigious coaching records that have fallen, most wins to start a season, most wins with a club to start a season, you are having very, very reputable names removed from the all-time record book in the name of a gimmick. And that's what it is. I mean, would you say that Bruce Boudreau is as good a coach as Don Cherry?
No.
And yet Bruce Boudreau now owns several coaching records that once belonged to Don Cherry. That's not fair. Those wins count, and they should not. Yeah. Bruce Boudreau won those records because he has Alex Semin, Alex Ovechkin, and Nick Backstrom for a good chunk of his time in Washington. I'm going to go ahead and call shenanigans on that. That's a big steaming pile of BS, no matter how you cut it.
That's an off-the-crossbar fact.
That is an off-the-crossbar fact.
Sorry, in an unrelated note, I'm just looking over the score sheets for this evening, and it appears that Martin Brodeur has been credited with a goal for the New Jersey Devils on the power play. So it was probably somebody tipped the goal and deflected off their Celsius last
one. Fantastic. That's, what, his second or third of his career?
He did a few.
And I believe that would put him among the NHL ranks of the only goaltender to score with a goalie in the opposing net.
Well, I don't know if it did, though. I'm not sure what happened. But
unless the goaltender, unless he touched it, they pulled the goaltender, and then a defenseman popped it in.
Anyhow.
We'll have to check in on that. Yeah, we'll
that later.
I think you'll get a live replay on the radio of that later. Fantastic. The shootout, I know we're seeing great point totals, and I know that we are appealing to a market that needs decisiveness. To me, this really speaks to the sort of obsessive-compulsive ADHD nature of our society. We need a decisive winner. We need it now, or else it doesn't count. Are we really that childish as sport fans?
Your original Sixers, I don't think, are. I think that in a lot of the areas where hockey is a relatively new thing, where it's still a bit of a novelty, people who pay money, any amount of money, even if it is almost given away in those markets to get them in the door, they want to see a decisive result, whether it be the home team winning or losing. I think a lot of people get pissed off by seeing a tie. They say, well, you know, we're going to war. We got to win or lose. You know, you got to have a solid one way or the other result.
And, I mean, I understand that I have been as critical as anybody else of the speed of the game of soccer in which it unfolds. But when you consider the fact that the most popular sport on earth frequently ends in a tie and in a very low-scoring tie, I mean, it really does just sort of speak to the fast food culture that we are living in North America right now. We want instant gratification. We want it crammed down our gullet hole. We want it quick, and we don't want to pay for it. That's disgusting. I mean, to me, it's turning the game of hockey into a more disposable entity. And that's not what hockey is to me. Hockey is timeless. Hockey is classic. And when we start literally messing with the way that games are decided, win or lose, we've crossed the line. Look, if you want to tweak down the goaltender's equipment to improve scoring and make the game a little more exciting, if you want to adjust the size of the net, adjust some of the rules as to where the goaltender can and can't play the puck, where players can and can't go in the run of a game, if you want to make some things penalties that are not currently penalties, that's fine. But you're not literally putting your hands in the pot and selecting a winner based on something that has never before been relevant to the game of hockey. That crosses a line to me. That taints the purity of the game. And as we've gotten deeper and deeper into the shootout era of hockey, I have become more and more angered by that.
Yeah. Disillusionment, anger, call it what you want. It really is just dumbing down the game.
And it's dumbing it down. I mean, listen, it's essentially putting the game on a sugar high where it should be on a meat and potatoes diet. You know, like, yeah, it's a buzz, but at what expense? I mean, we're getting to the point where it's
realistically, do you think that it's ever going to go away?
No, and that kills me. To be perfectly honest with you, no, I don't.
And the reason I don't think it's going to go away is because we are now seeing the quote-unquote experts, the folks like Adam Proto out there, who are saying they simply don't want a tie. I think we're seeing a generation of fans that are coming into the game that are very used to this sugar high. They're used to it. I mean, it's the same reason we'll never see fast food culture disappear. It's the same. It's an addiction. Once you get those quick hits and you get your quick fix every time you tune in, it'll never be as satisfying. But so unfortunately, what we're going to have to do is make the game more and more and more exciting. How long is it before we just have a shootout to start the game to see who gets the puck first? I mean, that would make it more exciting. That would make it more quick hit, instant gratification.
I think I'd rather that. I'd rather they start with the shootout to see who gets possession of the puck to start the game than finish the game with a shootout to see who wins the game.
Me too.
Because you're doing something completely arbitrary to choose something completely arbitrary. Face-off is a 50-50 chance, so fine. Let them do a shootout to start the game. There you get your stupid excitement at the beginning, and then give me 10-minute overtime, 20-minute overtime, play until it's done, or even give them a tie, because realistically, you can play to a tie.
Yeah, or how about this? At the end of every game, at the beginning of every game, no matter what, there's a three-player shootout. All those goals are totaled at the end of the year, and in the event of a tie at the top of the standings, we can look at that.
Sure, yeah.
Maybe there's some relevance there. As it is, it irks me.
Anywho.
All right, let's get along. You are listening, again, to Off the Crossbar Live, presented by BackSportsPage.com and OffTheCrossbar.com. Check out our newest feature. I have got a new weekly / every 4 days / whenever I feel like it set up coming up. It's called Puck Nuggets. It's basically a straight sugar shot to the head of hockey information. It is the ADHD Twitterverse response. You're going to get a lot of little blurbs, things that we don't really have time to get to in the show, sometimes things that we do have time to get to in the show, but don't get to expand upon quite as much. Things I'd like to mention, but really don't have the effort to mention.
Or stuff that just doesn't occur to you whilst on the show and you pop up during the week.
Of course, yeah.
Great read.
It's a great little quick read. It's a 2 or 3 minute thing. Go check it out. Offthecrossbar.com. Crossbar, of course, with a K. All right. Let's talk trades.
On to the next.
We are closing in now officially
2 weeks away.
2 weeks? Yeah, 2 weeks and a little change away from the official trade deadline for this National Hockey League season. There are way too many names in play right now for us to get through all of them. So I'm going to read off a list that I have composed of the most eligible forwards and then defensemen and then goaltenders. And I'm going to ask Adam O. Wells here to pick a name off the list. Tell me where he thinks he's going to end up. Tell me why it's a good fit. Or tell me that he's not going to move at all.
Okay.
So we'll start with the forwards. We will go Jerome Iginla, Mike Camilleri, both from the Calgary Flames. Mike Ribeiro, a hot hand in Washington on a very cold team this season. Really one of the brightest surprises for the Washington Capitals this year. We're going to talk about the consummate journeyman, Brad Boys. Alex Hemsky, his name coming up once again at this trade deadline out of the Edmonton Oilers lineup. A trio of Dallas Stars will make the list. We will look at Brendan Morrow, Jeremiah Jagr, Derek Roy, and going to the San Jose Sharks, the perennial, almost made it, Ryan Klo.
Okay.
Who on that list do you see on the move and why?
Two of them. Jerome Iginla.
Yeah.
He's not getting any younger. He's 35 now, making $7 million, and I think he's a UFA at the end of this year.
He is.
I've heard that Pittsburgh and Boston have both been kicking tires on him.
Ooh.
And, you know, it would make sense because the guy's not going to win a cup in Calgary.
No, he's not.
So to give him a shot at it, you know, both Boston and Pittsburgh are doing very well, but they could also use a guy like Iginla with all of his experience.
And Boston going down with a lot of injuries right now. Krejci's out after taking that slap shot to the top of the knee. That looked nasty.
Yeah, that was painful. Awful.
So they could really use some help. They could use the grit, the sandpaper. He does fit the Boston Bruins model.
Yeah.
Quite interesting.
And maybe Derek Roy out of Dallas. I think he could end up somewhere like Anaheim because they could really make use of the solid second-line centerman. He's 29 years old. He's a UFA making $4 million a year.
he might be a good fit. You know, Anaheim's done some good stuff. They're not rolling in cap space, but they've got a lot of guys coming up as UFA at the end of the season, so they're going to be making some room if they need to. And Derek Roy is the kind of guy that can bring a lot to a team like Anaheim.
It's true, and he really is the prototypical rental player in that I know for a fact that Joe Nieuwendyk is hoping to sign Derek Roy to a long-term contract afterwards. They figure he's worth about what he's making now. Rumor has it, and I can't for the life of me figure out where Roy and his agent are coming up with this. He wants in the ballpark of $6 million on his next deal, and he's looking 4 years minimum.
So he wants a raise
of $1.5 million per year from the $4.5 he's making right now.
At 29, so he wants to play somewhere until he's
mid-30s. 34.
Listen, that's not unreasonable.
The age is not unreasonable.
The price might be a little high.
Derek Roy is not a $6 million a year player.
In the last few years? Not that much. I think he's a solid second-line center. You know,
exactly.
He'd be an asset, but he wouldn't. He's not going to be giving anybody like Getzlaf or Perry a run for their money for their slots. You know?
Well, that's true, but I mean, keep in mind, now both of those guys are making Sidney Crosby money with their new deals. Perry's making, what, $7.625 million? Or $8.625 million, excuse me?
In 13-14, the cap hit on Getzlaf is going to be $8.25, and Perry will be $8.625.
Yeah, so there you go. And Crosby's at $8.7.
Yeah. Crosby gave them a bargain, though, as we all know, because he wanted to stay in Pittsburgh, and he could have made a lot more money, but said 8.7, sure, that's my number, let's get her done. Yeah.
I don't know, because that did make him one of the highest paid players in the league upon signing that contract. And GM Ray Shiro coming out and saying that based on the new CBA, he was basically apologizing in the media when he mentioned the fact that Evgeny Malkin could be making more than Sidney Crosby when his deal comes due in the end of next season, I believe. Yeah, could you imagine? Well, you know what? I like that. So Derek Roy to Anaheim, I really like that fit, actually.
And if Dallas is giving people away, I wouldn't mind seeing Yager come to Montreal. Him and Plek are good buddies.
That's true. Yeah. That is true.
Again, Yager's going to want to go somewhere where, you know, there's a fighting chance. Dallas isn't overly hot.
No, they're not. And that's the real question, though, in the Western Conference is, are any of these teams going to pull the plug? I mean, I know we're going to get to discussing who we think is climbing and who we think is falling here in a few minutes, but when we're talking about this trade bait, we really do need to take that into consideration. How soon do you pull the plug? Remember, Dallas took a gamble a few years ago on Brad Richards, kept him in the lineup, essentially rented their own player on the assumption that they would be able to make a playoff run. They did not.
No.
Then watched him walk out the door to the New York Rangers and got nothing in return. Is Nieuwendyk really willing to do that again?
Well, I think a lot of teams are going to be scared of that exact sort of scenario.
Yep.
Especially in the West, it's just such a crapshoot with so few points separating so many teams from just playoff contention and the seller.
He is.
It's really... You've got a lot of GMs who are going to have their back to the wall. They've got to make some pretty big decisions, and, you know.
Yep, very true.
Some of their jobs are going to count on it, too. So.
Very true, and I mean, that's always the case in the West. Okay, well, looking at that forward ranking, we are, go figure, a little pushing up on time on this one. Again, we haven't even gotten to the defensemen and the goalies yet. I'm going to say Iginla as well. I know his relationship with Mr. Sutter in Los Angeles is quite strong. My only concern is, will the Calgary Flames move him to a place where they have to see him again? That would be a very unpopular fan move. I don't think his style of game is better suited to anywhere else. Could you imagine seeing Carter, Richards, and Iginla coming at you as a second line? That's terrifying in the playoffs. Another guy I think on the move, as I mentioned before, the consummate journeyman, Brad Boyes. I didn't realize how many teams this guy has played for. Played for the San Jose Sharks, played for the Boston Bruins, played for the St. Louis Blues, played for the Buffalo Sabres, and is currently a New York Islander.
Five teams. How old is this guy?
He is, I believe, 31 years old. Still quite young. Born in 1982.
Been around.
Also a guy who's put up 43 goals in a season in 2008. People forget how offensively gifted Brad Boyes can be for stretches. And given his physicality, given his propensity to get the work done in the corner, I mean, 6'1", 203-pound right winger, that's a pretty short commodity in the National Hockey League right now. you can get those grinders that can plug in that second, even first line role, he's going to be a very valuable commodity for a playoff team. There's a guy I wouldn't mind seeing come to Montreal, but there's a guy who perfectly fits the Toronto Maple Leafs prototype.
Ah,
I know, but
they don't need more big guys who can flatten little guys. They've got a lot of those.
Well, they've also got little guys to protect. I mean, I would love to see him skating alongside Mikhail Grabowski if I was a Toronto Maple Leafs fan.
I'd love to see him skating into Mikhail Grabowski as a fan of any other hockey team.
Fair enough.
I got another one, I got another one for you, though, as a possible for, Dan Boyle.
Well,
for the Rangers.
And that's where we were going to get into the defensemen. I've got Bouwmeester, Boyle, Leopold out of Buffalo, and Jack Johnson's name has been coming up, which is surprising given...
He had a good song a couple years ago, didn't he?
He did have a couple of good songs.
Yeah.
Good for him. Multifaceted.
Awesome.
What have you got on Boyle? This is a guy whose name I've heard linked to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I think he'd fit pretty well with New York. He won a cup with Torts in Tampa.
Yeah, there is that relationship.
And
only a certain number of guys can play for Tortorella. If you've got a superstar who you know can play for Tortorella... I like that. That's a good fit.
The other question, though, is with New York currently sitting in eighth in the East, if they make the playoffs, all right, they're good. If for whatever reason they don't, odds are Torts is gone. Because we spoke about this a couple weeks ago.
That's true.
He's kind of lost the room a little bit. So maybe...
Well, potentially.
Well, yeah, but he's...
It looks that way. But because he's so ornery in the media, it always looks like he's lost the room. It's very difficult to tell what's going on inside a John Tortorella locker room.
Grumpy bastard.
He is. Did you hear when the Rangers were in Winnipeg 3 or 4 nights ago, the crowd chanting, "Let's go, Brooksy"?
No.
That was awesome. Of course, making the play on Brooks and Tortorella in their notoriously rocky relationship in the New York media. Winnipeg fans, sharp cats, very witty fellas. I like those Winnipeg fans.
Absolutely.
So on the defensive end, let's call a spade a spade. I really do believe that the Calgary Flames will be clearing house. I don't think that they're going to be able to make that run, and therefore Jay Bouwmeester becomes a very hot commodity. I see him going to the Detroit Red Wings. They have never been able to fill that gap. Listen, they're not going to be able to replace Nick Lidstrom.
No, never.
But they were also unable to replace Brad Stewart. And I think when you look at Stewart and you look at Bouwmeester, you get a very similar end result. Cronwall is doing a fantastic job in Detroit right now, but he can't do it alone. He's not Nick Lidstrom. Nick Lidstrom is about the only guy who had that capacity to put that team on his back single-handedly. But I do like Bouwmeester's fit. I also like Boyle as a potential fit because Detroit really needs an offensive quarterback for that power play right now. And he's got a full year left on his contract after this year, which is a big selling point. But you know what? He's one of the few guys who's worth it. I mean, he commands $6.7 million because he is a legitimate number one power play quarterback, which is very difficult to find.
But if you want to look at a strong power play quarterback as well, you got Mark Streit coming up as a UFA at the end of this season. He's 35 years old. He'd fit in somewhere nicely Detroit or even in Calgary, because Calgary is going to need somebody strong on point to help lead them if they are going to be cleaning house.
Yeah, and they do love bringing in guys that are way too old.
Yeah, there you go. You know, Kipper, and they can all go down to the AARP meetings.
I like Street, and again, you look at essentially the prototypical teams that would be looking. I don't think they're going to let him stay in New York. I don't think they're going to let him keep his house, but he would be a good fit. Just not a lot of love lost between the Islanders and Rangers historically. I don't see the trade being made. I do like the idea of him ending up...
Rangers? Who said Rangers? I didn't say Rangers.
Oh, no, I just said when I run down the list of possibilities, you look at the guys who are looking for that quarterback.
Yeah.
Isn't it great to not be mentioning Montreal in this conversation?
I think it's fantastic. Everybody in Montreal
is Diaz,
fine with that.
Markov,
Georges. Defensive depth.
Absolutely, and
now
it's been a long time. It has been a long time coming. I think Leopold will be on the move. I genuinely think the Buffalo Sabres will be cleaning house. I don't know where he will end up because to me he's an overvalued commodity. Not quite in the same breath as Bouwmeester, Boyle, and Johnson, but definitely a valuable commodity. And let's face it, the Sabres suck. They're terrible. I mean, they're awful.
Hey, speaking of Sabres and goalies,
what are the odds that that Miller's going to stick around?
I think he's
overstayed his welcome. He is still a fantastic goalie. He's faced more shots than anybody in the game. He's made more saves than anybody in the league at this point in the season. He still has an over 900 save percentage and under 3 goals against average. I mean, the guy is still a solid goalie. He might be a yappy little
but
punk.
Is he a good teammate? That's the thing about goaltenders is, look, Tim Thomas is not working right now. And you have to believe that it's not only because he needed some personal time.
But the thing with Miller is that if you put a camera in his face, he's going to talk and say something stupid. If you put him in a market where people aren't paying attention, like Florida, like Phoenix.
Yeah, I don't know that,
I don't think. Yeah, he still might yak. He still might be a bit of a pain in the ass to his teammates. But if nobody's really listening to him, then I don't think it's going to be as much of an effect. And maybe he'll just shut his mouth and get focused on playing hockey.
Maybe. But here's, like, I just – and again, like, to be perfectly fair – I have a difficult time judging Ryan Miller's responses to the media fairly, because the guy rubs me the wrong way. I don't like Patrick Kane. I don't like Ryan Miller. The two guys, they come across wrong. I don't want to have a beer with those guys when I see them on television.
No,
and most NHL hockey players seem to me to be the kind of guys I'd like to take out and have a beer with. Miller. You even look at this week talking about Coletta. Did Coletta say the right thing in the media when he came out and said, you know, I just want to be out there. I'm genuinely pissed off. I want to be a part of this team, blah, blah, blah. No, he did not say the right thing in the media. But is the right response to have your starting goaltender go out and basically
hang out the drive,
piss and moan in the media about how it's unprofessional to piss and moan to the media? I mean, really, Ryan Miller?
But that's vintage Miller. That's what he's been doing forever.
Exactly. And that's
got worse since last year when he
and that's
he
just the perfect example. Oh, yeah, of
he
course.
Became the victim, and now he's just always the victim.
Well, that's it. It gave him the platform. I mean, that's the worst thing that could happen to a guy like that, is he actually is the victim in a given set of circumstances.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get off this guy's back.
We're on goalies now, so
listen, let me finish off by saying Ryan Miller is a fantastic goaltender.
Yep.
Could definitely take a team that is on the playoff bubble and turn them into a dark horse surprise team in the playoffs. He has the ability, and I don't know the guy personally. It's hard for me to sit here and talk about him, but from what I've seen, he does not appear to be a good teammate. We'll leave it at that.
Agreed.
Do you see him on the move?
Yes, but he's not the first ones I'd look at for being on the move.
All right. I see him as an off-season trade candidate.
Yeah, he'll
– much more so.
Buffalo's got nothing really to gain. They're not going to get a better goalie to come in and fill in. The goaltending is not their problem right now.
No,
And they don't have that much depth in nets that they can – if they're trading, they need to bring in some offense.
Unless they get the deal. I mean, listen, they're suffering. I mean, Steve Ott for Derek Roy.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to bang my own head off the table for that. Steve Ott's a great hockey player and definitely brings an element to the team. But that – I mean, you got hosed.
Yeah, you got hosed.
You got hosed.
But as far as goalies who I do think will move this year, Jonathan Bernier is wasting away.
You're telling me. Quick. You know what kills me is this idea – that the LA Kings need to hold on to Bernier in case something happens to Quick.
That's stupid. I mean, you're wasting this guy's career. He's making $1.25 million a year.
26 years old.
26 years old, $1.25 million a year. He's a restricted free agent at the end of this season. Or isn't he 24?
Is he 24?
I think he's 24.
Maybe I got my stats wrong.
Anyhow, but he's the kind of guy who could be starting in a lot of other cities and making, you know, $3-4 million a year, no problem.
Yep.
And playing, you know, 55 games a season, no sweat.
And that's why I see Jerome Iginla and a first-round draft pick coming to the LA Kings in exchange for Jonathan Bernier, and then Kiprusoff being shipped out the door to somebody who needs a veteran goaltending presence. Maybe the Toronto Maple Leafs, the trade history is there. I mean, they owe him one for Phaneuf. The least they could do is send him Kiprusoff.
And your next one, I say, would be Ben Bishop.
There's a sexy thing. Not on a lot of guys' radars. Tell me what you think about this, because I love your school of thought here.
Well, he's an RFA. Sitting in Ottawa. Ottawa, once Anderson's back, they have their clear starter. They've also got, what's his name?
Robin Leonard.
Robin Leonard, who is being solid as all hell as well.
Yep.
This kid, he could also go and make a name for himself anywhere else in the league. Where people, there are a lot of teams who could use a solid goaltender. And this guy is just wasting away. He's sitting there warming the bench. You know, he's getting a few games here and there, but really, he's not getting his chance to shine. Goalies need to get a bunch of games in a row. You need to be able to find your stride and show what you can really do. and he's not going to get
it. And Leonard's, I mean, you're right. Bishop's got all the potential in the world. But speaking of potential, and speaking of shameless plugs for my Puck Nugget article, I mentioned one very hot goaltender in this week's premier edition of Puck Nuggets. Let me throw two names at you and see which one bounces off the wall. Brian Elliott, Yaroslav Halak.
Yeah.
You don't need three all-star goaltenders in St. Louis.
No, and right now they're
right now you don't. You don't really need two.
No.
Which,
Jake
where,
Allen.
And why?
Well, Jake Allen has come in. He's played 11 games and won 10 of them, right?
That ain't a bad start.
Or no, am I wrong here? No, yeah, he's played 11.
No,
sorry,
you're
eight.
Right.
Eight wins.
Eight wins.
The kid is solid. St. Louis has an embarrassment of riches when it comes to goalies coming in and heating up.
I mean, Elliott isn't great right now, but...
No, but he's not a backup.
But he's either. And he's proven that he can catch fire. As has Halak, if I recall correctly, he had an okay run.
Yeah, Halak, I mean, his save percentage isn't great right now at an .881, but he's still got a 2.3 goals against. I mean, he...
So do you... I would think that one of these guys will be on the move.
Yeah, you got to get rid of one of them. I like Halak a lot. He's just like a sentimental favorite for me from his magical run here in Montreal. So do I want to see him move? Yes, if it's somewhere that he can go and thrive in the West. Not if it's somewhere to come and make a mockery of the Canadians in the East.
Here's a scary thought.
Don't say Toronto.
Why not?
Because I said not to say Toronto. So
I mean, that is the move that makes the most sense to me.
Sure. It makes the most sense for every good goalie to go to Toronto because they need a goalie.
Well, and because they have some pieces in the form of a Jake Gardiner, in the form of some other critical building block style pieces. I mean, some functioning nuts and bolts, which a coach like Ken Hitchcock absolutely loves to work with. The trade makes sense. You get him out of the conference, you don't have to see him again. Mm-hmm. Gardiner goes somewhere where the pressure's off. They don't have a free Jake Gardiner campaign. He gets a fantastic defensive coach like Ken Hitchcock. Toronto gets the goaltender they need in the relatively, let's say, mid to late prime to bring up one of their kids behind. Mm-hmm. It makes an awful lot of sense for everybody involved.
It absolutely does. It sucks for the rest of the East if that were to happen, but as far as Toronto goes, they really couldn't lose.
All right, you heard it here first. Right off the top of my head, the Halak Nest monster to the Toronto Maple Leafs. I'd like to see it. And, of course, we're 8 minutes overtime on this segment. Let's move along. You are listening to Off the Crossbar Live, presented by BackSportsPage.com and OffTheCrossbar.com. Crossbar with a K.
With a K.
All right, let's talk about what's going to change. Because right now we have got a very solid playoff picture shaping up in both conferences. In the Eastern Conference, 1-8, Pittsburgh, Montreal, Winnipeg holding down the Southeast Division lead. Boston Bruins, Ottawa Senators, Toronto Maple Leafs, that's right, set them in the top eight. Carolina Hurricanes, New York Rangers. Adam, who is going to fall out of this playoff picture?
I don't want to burst your bubble, but I think Toronto is.
Now, you're not bursting my bubble. Look, I am not emotionally vested in the Toronto Maple Leafs at all. I'm just impressed by what I've seen, especially with the Palindronius one. Joffrey Lupul coming back after all that injury talk. And I'm going to go out and say it. I get one swear word a week. A bullshit suspension by Brendan Shanahan. Was it a hit to the head? Yeah, it was. Was it dangerous in any way? Nope. The guy just kept on skating, and I've seen guys get away with far, far worse under the regime of the Shanahammer.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know. Maybe Shanahammer was having a bad day. Maybe Lupul said something to him at a conference that he didn't really like and wanted to get him back. Who knows?
Who knows? All right, so you've got Toronto falling out of the Eastern picture. Anybody else? Anybody else you see shuffling around?
I still think Tampa Bay is going to get it together.
All right.
Still think they can make it up in Dark Horse, you know, get in right at the end.
So that would, in theory, then throw either Winnipeg or Carolina out of the playoff picture. I can't imagine three teams from the Southeast squeaking into the playoffs.
Oh, God, no. But, I mean, if you look at it, Winnipeg is third in the Eastern Conference with 34 points only because they're first in their division, right?
Yep.
I mean, Tampa is 7 points behind them right now, so it doesn't look good. But
true, and Carolina is 2 points behind.
But with the streaky nature of teams this season, I just think that what goes up must come down. And
all right.
Yeah, I see some forward movement for Tampa and some downward movement for Toronto.
So who takes Toronto's spot then? Somebody's got to climb.
Yeah. It'd be nice to see Philly get in and then be eliminated by somebody like Montreal quickly.
It would be. And here comes the part where I reveal that I have completely set you up.
Uh-oh.
Because nobody's going anywhere.
No one's going anywhere.
Nobody's going anywhere.
I didn't even know that was an option.
Carolina is going to jump past the Winnipeg Jets and steal that division. They're too good a team not to. Winnipeg will sneak into the playoffs. I have last year's Stanley Cup finalists, the New Jersey Devils, not making the playoffs this year. Listen, I like Marty Brodeur, but at the end of the day, they lost too much in the offseason.
There's just not much left
there. They were too drained. They're too old. I didn't think they were going to have a whole lot to run on last year. I was proven wrong. I think I was just a year early, to be perfectly honest with you. I see this playoff picture shaping up exactly as it is. I've got the Rangers, the Devils, the Islanders, the Lightning, the Flyers, Buffalo, Washington, and Florida all missing the playoffs in the Eastern Conference this year. I don't think that playoff picture is going to change.
It'd be cool. I mean, if the playoffs were to start today, you'd have Pittsburgh facing New York, Montreal facing Toronto. I mean, that'd be pretty fun to watch.
Montreal would play Carolina.
Carolina. Oh, yeah, my bad. Yeah.
No, they'll play Carolina. If Carolina is to catch Winnipeg, wouldn't Montreal-Winnipeg be one hell of a playoff series from the fan perspective?
Absolutely.
You talk about two markets that just plain out give a damn.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of give a damn in those two cities.
High degree of give a damn.
Yep. Many dams are given. All right, moving on to the West.
While we're in the East, though.
Slam on the brakes.
Yeah, while we're in the East, though, we should mention that Pittsburgh has won 10 games in a row.
Auto.
Yeah, right.
That's like, what, half a streak to the Chicago Blackhawks? Come on.
The Habs have only lost one game at home in their past 18.
Okay, now that I'm impressed by.
7-1-2 in the last 10. Ottawa is 10-1-3 at home this season. And Philly is a dismal 4-12-0 on the road.
Many bears in woods.
Many bears in woods.
And Przygalov winning player of the week honors 2 weeks ago. So this is despite a fairly hot streak from the Philadelphia Flyers. I mean, they're trying to dig their way out of a hole with a shovel and getting deeper.
Yep.
All right, moving on to the West. 8 teams sitting in the playoff picture. Obviously, the Chicago Blackhawks leading the entire National Hockey League. Anaheim not far behind. Funny fact, though, despite the fact that Anaheim is that close, they have fewer wins than the Pittsburgh Penguins. That's how good Pittsburgh has been of late. Minnesota leading their division, sitting in third overall, followed by the Los Angeles Kings, St. Louis Blues, Vancouver Canucks, Detroit Red Wings, and San Jose Sharks, all sitting in the top 8 of the Western Conference and looking pretty for a playoff position. Who you got?
The
Who's
West
falling?
Is the West is just ridiculous. There are 13 teams within 10 points of each other right now. And anybody could go and anybody could stay. It's not. I mean, Chicago and Anaheim, unless something horrible happens, like a meteorite hits their arena or whatever.
That is us knocking on wood. If that happens, I don't want to be held responsible.
No, definitely not. But, I mean, this conference is anybody's to go right now. I mean, the playoff picture, we could call 10 things right now, and they could all change in a week and then change right back.
Well, I'm asking you to call 2.
Oh, come on.
Who moves? Well, not even. Just tell me, who moves, who doesn't move? Looking at your top 8, who do you think will be in the playoffs when the final whistle is blown?
I don't think San Jose will. I don't know. I think Phoenix will come up, take them a little bit, because San Jose started the season fantastically, and they've just gone downhill ever since.
And what about the red-hot Columbus Blue Jackets?
Well, there you go.
7-0-3 in their last 10.
Yeah.
Do you see that continuing? They, in theory, could win the Central.
Just who's there to keep it up, though?
Who's there to start it? There's nobody there now.
Anaheim and Columbus are both 7-0-3 in their last 10.
I mean, did you ever think you'd say that Derek Brassard is the hottest player in the National Hockey League? He is. I mean, realistically, his complete game end-to-end right now, I'd put him up against any player in the league over the last 10 games.
Yeah, I mean, he's been fantastic.
Yep.
And it, I mean,
Nashville's lost four in a row.
Yep.
They're just going steadily down.
No, they're like Wile E. Coyote off the edge of a cliff.
Minnesota's won four in a row. And, you know, Minnesota, they were a nice surprise last year, and I think they can continue to do so.
Yeah, not a surprise this year. I mean, they took a very solid club and added some very good pieces to finally starting to look like the team we thought that they would be. When you see Parisi, however he wants it pronounced in the American accent, because apparently staying true to your roots by mispronouncing a French name is a thing. Ryan Suter, these guys are finally starting to click. So you've got San Jose falling back. You've got Phoenix climbing up. Do you have Columbus getting in?
I just don't know if they can maintain this.
No,
I. I'd love to. It'd be awesome to see it. It would be exciting to see. Yeah.
It would be.
2 years in a row for them to make
And after
up.
Shipping Nash out?
Yeah.
To see them still come knocking?
Yeah.
I would like to see it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to put them as a probable no, but a hopefully yes.
All right. All right. I like that. Yeah, I'm a cop out on this one, too. Nobody's moving.
You suck.
Hey, listen. That's the thing is I set up this segment genuinely believing that I would go take a look at the standings and move some guys around. Chicago's going to make the playoffs. Anaheim's going to make the playoffs. Minnesota, we just talked about, is fantastic. Los Angeles is the defending Stanley Cup champions. I had them picked to win their division and the President's Trophy. St. Louis is the best coach team in the league. Vancouver has two all-star goaltenders. Detroit are the friggin' Red Wings. And San Jose is simply too talented. This may be the year that San Jose has been waiting for. The last number of seasons, they have been that sexy preseason pick that everybody wants to be on that bandwagon. This year, they weren't. And they started out of the gate 7-0 and then plummeted a little bit. Here's a team that's used to walking in atop the Western Conference and crumbling under the pressure. If they sneak in the back door, they still have Joe Thornton, Joe Pavelski, Ryan Clough, Dan Boyle, a Stanley Cup winning goaltender in Antti Niemi.
Patrick Marleau.
I mean, this is a very, very good hockey team with a very, very good coach, very, very good goaltending, and no pressure. Yeah. To be perfectly honest with you, I hope Phoenix does not make the playoffs. It's about time they started paying for their sins. I don't think Columbus is very good, to be perfectly honest with you. I like the streak. I like the feel-good story. I had the Dallas Stars picked to win their division at the beginning of the year, to challenge the Los Angeles Kings for that division lead. I haven't seen it. The chemistry hasn't been there. They've been knocked around with the injury bug to a much greater extent than anybody thought was possible. Edmonton, I think, is clearly not ready yet. Nashville has been surprisingly terrible, and Calgary and Colorado are both essentially out of the picture in my books.
Yeah, I mean, what the hell? Come on.
When I look at that top eight, East and West, I don't see anybody moving. I'm going to take the riskiest prediction I possibly can and say status quo is what we're going to see when the playoffs roll around. I think we're going to see them jostle for position down the stretch, but I like the top eight in both conferences right now.
Think there's any chance that Anaheim will get ahead of Chicago?
Yes.
Yeah?
I think Anaheim is a better team than Chicago right now. I don't think that they're a better hockey club in terms of talent, but I think when you see those two teams take the ice, like we saw, last night? Or was it the night before? I don't know. I have a new baby at home. They're all blurring together. Very recently, I watched the Anaheim Ducks beat the Chicago Blackhawks, and they appeared to be a better hockey team. I think, again, I always talk about ceiling and floor. The Chicago Blackhawks have a significantly higher ceiling, but I think the Anaheim Ducks have a significantly higher floor. I think their base level is significantly better. So, that's how I've got it shaping up. Right now, if we were to look at it, we would see Chicago, San Jose in the first round. Awesome.
Yep.
We would see Anaheim, Detroit. Awesome. Minnesota, Vancouver. L.A. St. Louis, perhaps a rematch of what I was expecting to be the most exciting series last year. Didn't quite turn out that way.
Not so much.
L.A. put a real stomping on them.
LA,
I actually picked the Blues to win that series last year, despite the fact that I had picked the Kings to win the Cup at the beginning of the season. My views had changed.
It was the lack of Halak.
The Halak-Halak.
All right. Well, we've got one more segment to go.
We've got gold ore, silver ore, and now even Bobby Orr.
Ooh, I like that.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we are talking Bobby Orr. Adam, our stat monkey, has climbed the stat tree and is coming down with a fresh bushel. Let's see what we've got on the go. Give us a rundown. Listen, we know Bobby Orr is Bobby freaking Orr. Let's just elaborate for those who are not as in-depth into the hockey world, for those who just need a little bit of it, and try not to go too fast in case anybody's working their pencils at home.
All right, Bobby Orr, 12 seasons in the NHL from 1966 to 1979.
Correct.
657 games, so
and
not
to be
a whole,
fair,
whole lot of games.
To be fair,
yeah.
Up until 76 was his real career.
Yes.
He played some games with the Chicago Blackhawks.
On one leg.
Wasn't that great, yeah, literally on one leg.
So 657 games played, which in 12 seasons isn't that much, but I mean, comparatively, anyhow. 915 points. He averaged 1.39 points per game.
As a point of comparison for those at home, Sidney Crosby, the dominant center in the National Hockey League today, averaging 1.41 points per game. Bobby Orr from the blue line,
yeah,
averaging 1.39.
Yeah. And also 953 penalty minutes. This guy could handle himself, too.
Absolutely.
He wasn't afraid to drop the gloves, wasn't afraid to get rough if he had to. Whatever it took, he was a winner from end to end.
And actually, I'll tell a story to go with that stat, since you're the stat guy, I'm the story guy. It's
go
kind of what
it.
We do. One of my favorite Bobby Orr stories, and I'm not my favorite. I will tell you my favorite a little bit later on in this segment. But one of my favorite Bobby Orr stories is told by Don Cherry, actually. They're losing a game in Madison Square Garden to the New York Rangers. Esposito skates by the bench, a teammate of Bobby Orr, a forward at that. Bobby reaches over the bench, grabs him by the jersey with less than 2 minutes left in the third period, picks him up, drops him down on the Boston bench, jumps onto the ice, and blindside attacks a New York Ranger. After the game, Don Cherry asks him, "Bobby, why'd you do that?" And Bobby Orr says, "He was laughing at us." Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome.
That's some gumption.
That is a mean streak a mile wide. Bobby Orr had
pride in your team, too, though, man. That's team spirit. That's a guy who played for most of his career on the same team, wasn't worried about being traded because he was just such great trade.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? That's the beauty of back then.
And I forget the guy now, but I remember there was a period where Bobby Orr was booed in Toronto every single time he went there. I forget who it was, but there was a guy caught Bobby Orr with a high stick. And one of Orr's teammates went after him and was just wailing on him on the ice. Bobby Orr gets up, wipes the blood off his face, skates over, grabs his teammate, throws him into the board so hard that he breaks the guy's ribs, and then proceeds to beat the offending player himself in the back of the head on top of the ice. He was booed in Toronto every time he went back after that in his career. You talk about a mean streak from one of the nicest guys on earth.
Okay, so back to the stats. He was the first defenseman to score 40 goals. He was the first defenseman to win the scoring title.
Yeah.
His best season in 1970-71, he scored 139 points, 37 goals, 102 assists, and a plus 124 to finish.
Plus 124. For a little perspective for anybody at home, last season's leader, Patrice Bergeron, a plus 36.
He was a career plus 597 all was. Okay, he's 11th all-time in defenseman for points. 7th among Canadians. And this is behind guys' names of, you know, Bork, Paul Coffey, Al MacInnis, Phil Housley, Nick Lidstrom.
And all guys who played in the ballpark
well over a
double
games.
The games that Bobby Orr got to play in his career.
Yeah, the only guy, the only person, the other NHLer who had even close in points per game, we said Bobby Orr was 1.39. Paul Coffey, who was second on the list, he averaged 1.09 points per game.
Well, there you go.
And played 1,409 games.
There you go. And Bobby Orr, like, again, we talk about, is he the best of all time? Well, let's put it this way. One player in the history of the National Hockey League has won the Norris Trophy as the best defenseman, the Hart Trophy as the league MVP, the Art Ross Trophy as the league's leading scorer, and the Conn Smythe Trophy as the playoff MVP in the same season. Bobby Orr did it twice.
Sick.
He did it twice. I mean, which is when you cross into the realm of ridiculous. And his time as a Boston Bruin,
Bobby Orr entered the league in 1967, won the Calder Trophy as Rookie of the Year, played eight more years with the Bruins, won eight consecutive Norris Trophies as the best defenseman in the National Hockey League.
Jesus.
Unbelievable talent. And not just talent. Because when you talk about talent, you can mention a lot of names in a lot of different breaths. When we start talking about the best ever, I want to talk about class. And I want to talk about dignity and pride in the game. And that's when Bobby Orr separates himself. Harry Sinden, the president of the Boston Bruins for a long time, said that the moment Bobby Orr became a superstar was round about the last note of the national anthem in his first game. And it's a great statement because he knew the character that Bobby Orr was going to bring to the game. In 1976, he had left the Bruins in a very controversial manner. Allan Eagleson had essentially screwed Bobby Orr out of his contract, out of his opportunity. And later on, to be perfectly frank, Allan Eagleson basically robbed Bobby Orr blind. He's the reason that he ended up in a lot of financial trouble. It's the reason that Bobby Orr became a player agent, started his agency later on down the line. But that's irrelevant to this story. That's just sort of a sidetrack. Bobby Orr agreed to go play for the Chicago Blackhawks at the end of the day. And again, a murky situation that got him there. But at the end of the day, he ended up being a Chicago Blackhawk. He showed up, tried to play parts of three seasons. They had signed him to a deal worth $3 million. It was just essentially $12.5 million in today's money for, I believe it was five seasons. Partway through that deal, and this money was to be paid over 30 years to basically help Bobby avoid taxes. These paychecks were still coming to Bobby Orr's house until 2005. The moment Bobby decided that he could no longer play at the National Hockey League level, he played his last game December 28, 1979, He scored his last goal against the Detroit Red Wings. How do you like that for no stat sheet in front of me? He decided he could no longer do it on one leg. He stopped cashing the paychecks. Bobby Orr has never cashed a paycheck from the Chicago Blackhawks starting that day, stating simply, I get paid to play hockey. If I don't play hockey, I don't deserve to be paid. And this is a guy whose agent robbed him blind, left him in bankruptcy, left him staring down the barrel of financial ruin for the rest of his life, left him hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, and he had paychecks coming in that he refused to cash because he didn't earn them.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, you know, you talk about classic NHLers, you think of Gordie Howe, Joe Sakic handing over the cup, but I mean, that's just, it's taking it up a notch.
It is. I get goosebumps telling the story.
Yeah.
And you hear Gordie Howe was interviewed by the Hockey News in, I believe, 2005 or 2006. And he was quoted as saying, the saddest day in the history of the National Hockey League was the day we lost Bobby Orr. And, I mean, when you get that kind of comment from that kind of player and that kind of man, and you understand the things that he sacrificed for his own principles and to simply be that stand-up guy. And, I mean, the pain and the suffering that he went through in his career. I mean, Bob McKenzie said it best. Bobby Orr's left knee is more complicated than a road map of downtown Boston. I mean, is he the greatest defenseman to ever play the game? Hell yes. Hell yes. And I am a huge Nick Lidstrom fan. The answer is a resounding yes. Nobody is even close. He may have been better than Wayne Gretzky. We will never know. We never got to see Bobby Orr. And it may be that Bruins curse. We never got to see Cam Neely at his peak. We had to wait for Ray Bourque to leave to see him at his peak to reach a pinnacle of professional success, I should say. He obviously did have some very good years. Bobby Orr may very well have been the greatest hockey player to ever lace up a pair of skates. Was he the greatest defenseman? Hell yes. Yeah. Should they rename the Norris Trophy? Hell yes.
Yeah, you know, I think we spoke about Orr once, and I had said that I couldn't really say that because I'd never seen him play. But since we had that conversation, I really went back and I found out all I could about the guy, and he really is just the epitome of what you want in a hockey player, from his ability on the ice to, you know, being a great teammate, an incredible goal scorer,
just dominating the play from end to end, doing whatever the hell he wanted, and everything at top speed all the time. And his actions off the ice, you know, from during his career and after becoming a player agent who was making damn sure that nobody else would go out and fall in the same circumstances he did.
Yeah, it saved a lot of young guys' careers.
Yeah, and yeah, I doff my cap to the guy.
Absolutely.
I think, rename the Norris the Orr.
And you know what? The only person in the world who would disagree with you is
James?
Bobby Orr.
Oh, well, yeah.
Is Bobby Orr. He's the only guy in the world. He didn't do any interviews on his birthday because he didn't want to be the center of attention.
He's the most humble guy in the world, too.
He really is. So you know what, Bobby? You may not want the accolades, but I'm giving them to you, man. Class act all the way. The perfect example of what a hockey player should be. And one hell of a note for us to end this week's show on. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. Listen to us next week. Get us on the download. Get us on the podcast. Check us out on offthecrossbar.com.
Crossbar with a K.
Thank you. We have got lots and lots of new stuff coming up. As I said, I got a baby at home. I am fidgety in the basement. You're going to hear lots and lots of hockey thoughts. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll catch you next week. And then it's time to go. Off the Crossbar.